Hey, everybody, on the Saturday episode of the Charlie Kirk Show, no advertisers. That's right, zero advertisers. And I want to thank all of you that make that possible at charliekirk.com/support. I give some opening remarks about the fight for life in Michigan, and then I have a panel with Abby Johnson and Candace Owens. A lot of fun, exclusive content has not yet been aired except for the people that came to the event. I think you'll enjoy this conversation with Candace all about life and what is happening in our country. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get behind our work and support us, it's charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank Barbara from Massachusetts. Thank you for supporting us. Jennifer from Bakersfield, California. Thank you. Allison from Dallas, Texas. I want to thank Joseph from Pennsylvania. I want to thank Mary from Georgia, Shannon from Carmel, and Richard from Washington. charliekirk.com/support to get behind us and the work we are doing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. America Fest. Jesse Waters, Candace Owens, Donald Trump Jr., Tucker Carlson, Kayleigh McEnany, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, all in one place, Phoenix, Arizona, tpusa.com/AMFEST, December 18, 19, 2021. Come to Phoenix, make a family gathering out of it. Tickets are running out. We are running low on tickets, so we need you to get them today, tpusa.com/AMFEST. Check it out, everybody. It's Saturday, no advertisers, so thank you for supporting us to make that possible. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Sorry I'm late. Complicated business. If you guys remember, Trump said that when he was late, when he won on that beautiful night in 2016. No, it's phenomenal to be here in the heartland of the country and Heartland, Michigan, which is really nice. And I just want to say first, thank you to the amazing organizers of this event. We traveled all the way across the country for this. I spoke here a couple years ago. And, you know, the fight for the unborn is the most important fight, that we have to fight for those that do not have a voice. And, you know, it kind of goes to this question of, when does life begin and what is a human life? And this church and the leadership of this church have done such a phenomenal job. And if we had 1,000 churches like this one, America would be in a much better place. I'll tell you what, truly. So I want to talk about a couple different things here. And then I think we're going to do a fun panel. I have some good news that I want to share because it seems as if there's not a lot of that. One of the reasons why I was late is because we live in a third world country now, if you haven't noticed, where if you book a flight, it's Russian roulette. You don't know if you're going to get canceled or you're going to go to Seattle instead of Denver and total redirection. So apologies for that. Southern border's wide open. Can't even offload supply chain containers. Inflation is a real thing. And it feels as if everything is going in the wrong direction. And I'm not going to be here to tell you that policy-wise it isn't. But I will tell you, though, that the other side, the collectivists, the statists, the people that are in support of abortion, I think the ruling class of this country is getting demoralized. And I think they thought this would be a lot different coming into October of 2021. Things would look a lot differently. And instead of giving up, after a lot of us were, I think, very disappointed after what happened when the current regime was implemented, not elected. That's a differentiation. Implementation versus election, right? And I think a lot of us were very disappointed in that, but versus other years, we did not kind of engage in what I believe is the number one kind of gateway to sin, which is self-pity. And I think we all know this, that self-pity is the beginning of a lot of the worst sins, especially sins of the flesh. I deserve this drink, or I've such a tough day at work, or things are so bad. I could just do what I want. The same is also politically, right? Which is things are not going the way I want them to. I don't need to show up to school board meetings. I don't need to show up to be a sidewalk counselor. I don't need to show up to do my job. Self-pity is a bad thing, and it's unbiblical, by the way. We as Christians are commanded to reject self-pity. We are saved because of Jesus Christ and thanks to Jesus Christ. And we should have that kind of cheer and joy in everything we do every single day. And so, but it's easy to want to kind of be involved in self-pity, especially when you start to see things go in a direction you've never seen them go before, where you have results come in the middle of the election night, mail-in ballots going in every single direction. And then you see a regime start to implement ideas and policies that are not just unpopular, but it seems as if they don't care about the political consequences associated with it. So in a typical kind of presidency, when you become president or win the presidency, you tend to care about what the people think. This current regime has a 36% approval rating. I want you to think about that. I mean, that's extraordinary. And why is that? You stole my line. I said, who are these people? You must listen to my radio show. I say, it's higher than I could have ever possibly imagined. Who are these people? And so, but usually when it gets to that level, the president and the chief of staff say, okay, let's slow things down. Let's start to do things more popular. Let's try to sue for peace. Let's go to the middle. Let's kind of have like, you know, a kids with cancer day at the White House, you know, really non-controversial type stuff, right? Let's go bring all the Olympic athletes to the White House. Instead, they say, you know what? We're super unpopular. Let's go mandate the vaccine against people's will and tell private companies they must do that. You know what? Let's go do, let's keep the southern border wide open and tell Americans it's actually good for you. And so there's one way to explain this. The only way is that they have no intent ever of running Joe Biden for political office again. That this is a metaphorical kamikaze president. That they now have a gift. And the gift is, what happened? What do you do if you don't care about approval ratings? This. What do you do when you don't care about the will of the people? Because you'll just replace it with, you know, Kamala or somebody else. And this is obvious to a lot of us. It's not a profound thought. The next thing I'm going to say is new thinking. We all know that they probably have no intention of running him for office again, but that's incredibly dangerous because it's uniquely un-American. The ultimate check and balance on power is the fact that we're going to vote you out of office. What happens if the president says, I don't care, I'm only going to serve out one term to run the country into the ground? What do you do then? That's new. And we used to call that a lame duck president. This whole presidency is a lame duck presidency where they just don't care. And because of that, they are not slowing down or pushing the brakes. They're accelerating on their punishment of fellow American citizens. So murders are up 30% year over year. Southern borders wide open. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people pouring into our country. You're all going to experience supply shocks very soon when you do Christmas shopping, and wait till you see the new prices. Dollar store is now the $1.25 store. It's probably going to be even more than that. It's true. And what is our administration? What's their top priority? The Department of Justice issues a memo saying that moms and dads showing up to school board meetings across the country are domestic terrorists, that they need to use the Patriot Act that was designed to go after people that are associated with Al-Qaeda. If you show up to school board meetings and complain that your children are learning about pornographic curriculum, or they're learning about abortion on demand, or they're learning about racist critical race theory. Merrick Garland signs an order saying that I'm going to use Department of Homeland Security, we're going to use the FBI, and we're going to use the DOJ to go and create a new commission to monitor, to spy on, infiltrate moms and dads showing up and complaining at local education area, local educational institutions, voicing their opinion. Turning Point USA, the organization that I founded and that we run, was listed in that letter, saying that what we are doing as our school board watch list is contributing to the targeting of school board officials across the country. And, you know, that's kind of when you're doing a great job, when the Department of Justice decides, you know what, murders up 30% last year. No memo, by the way, from the Attorney General on murders going up 30%. No memo on the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are coming into our country without any sort of testing, any sort of background, just coming straight into the interior of the country. But who are the real enemies? You. The real enemies are the patriotic Christians in the heartland of the country. And this regime has decided to declare, and I don't use this word lightly, a domestic war on all of us. I don't use that word lightly, and I don't like that word. That's an awful thing. Winston Churchill, the greatest man to live in the 20th century, he was good at war and he hated war. He knew what it meant. But this regime has said, you know what? we are now going to make all of you feel uncomfortable. We're going to come after you. And you see this reflected in a variety of different ways. And so the question is, how's that going for them? And here's actually the really good news. And I kind of mentioned this, is that they thought we would give up. And so as we are now in mid-October, and we're in this kind of situation where we're seeing the country unfold, the Zuckerbergs, the Bezos, Zuckerberg, who spent $420 million, by the way, to support Biden in the implementation, the unprecedented amount of outside money in this last election. How is this going for Francis Collins and for Fauci, who should have been fired on day one, by the way, and for all of these deep state government bureaucrats? They're looking at it and they say, huh. And this is why the DOJ memo about moms and dads showing up to school board meetings is so incredibly important to focus on, is they don't understand why we're growing in number and resolve. They don't get it. And they're saying it out loud. So there's a term that I want to introduce to all conservatives out there. And it's a book, and it's a very heady book, but it's by Nassim Taleb, which is called How to Be Anti-Fragile. So if I asked you what is the opposite of fragile, you would say it is durable. This social scientist introduced a new term. He said, how do you describe a group of people that grow stronger the more you attack them? Not that are able to survive, but they grow in number. They grow in their tenacity. He coined this term called anti-fragile. It is groups that actually get stronger the more stress you put on them. Very few groups in human history are anti-fragile. The American revolutionaries that founded our country were anti-fragile. The more they threw at our founding fathers, the stronger they got. They couldn't understand where the people were coming from. The more churches they burned down, the more people enlisted in their ranks. The more public hangings they did, the more people wanted to defeat the British. And so you look at around, you look at the conservative movement, they can't understand that the more they call us domestic terrorists, the more they spy on us, the more they put people that walk into the Capitol and take a selfie and put them in solitary confinement because they were there on January 6th, the more they punish and penalize us, the more they say it's the big lie, all of a sudden they're like, why are these rallies growing in size? Why are moms and dads now not doing the self-pity party, but they're showing up and they're telling the school board member, you're going to be out of office soon? They don't get it. And here's the reason, is that thanks to President Trump and the conservatives around him, all of a sudden there's a new conservative movement in town. And that's a good thing, is that the conservative movement is now not one that is going to be the Mitt Romney and John McCain. After 2008, 2012, where you kind of just sit around and you're like, okay, the country's going down. I guess there's nothing I could do about it. Like, I'll go buy a pillow and watch Tucker Carlson, I guess, right? By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com for all of you wondering, okay? Seriously, I mean that. Write that down. The Giza Dream Sheets, amazing. I tell you, they're phenomenal. The slippers, heavenly. It's very good. That's not enough to save the Republic, and we know it. Instead, all of you, and I want to compliment you and encourage you, your activity, your prayers, your intervention into the spiritual domain of all this. All of a sudden, the ruling class is, I don't get it. This is why Francis Collins is resigning. This is why John Stewart is coming up and he's saying, huh, it looks like they're going to take back power soon. And I'm not even making this Republican versus Democrat, because that's not what this is about. Let me be very clear. This is about people that want to preserve America and people want to destroy America. You guys can figure out the political side yourself. It's that simple. Now, I mean that because there's some people in the Republican Party that are a complete waste of time. Michigan has a few, and I'm not going to get into that, I promise. And it's a few. But here we are in mid-October, and our forces are increasing, and our resolve is strengthening. And I've been doing this only for 10 years, traveling the country. I've given over 2,500 speeches. I visit college campuses, so you don't have to. And on Monday, we're going to University of Vermont, so please pray for us as we go to University of Vermont. We were just at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, 2 weeks ago. Was anyone at that event? It was actually a great event. It was awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Then University of Minnesota, Mankato. After that, we were also, where were we? Oh, yeah, Baylor. We were just in Texas. I can't even remember. Like, where am I, right? I don't really know. And so I'm telling you, the biggest problem when we show up to these events Yeah, we have the, you know, Antifa and all that nonsense. We can't find rooms big enough to be able to facilitate all the students that want to show up to our events. It's a big deal. And so, for those of you that said, don't give up hope in January, thank you. For those of you in February that showed up to school board meetings and you kept the fight going, thank you. That mattered more than you could ever imagine, because now the ruling class, they thought they could shock and awe us and blitzkrieg us into submission. They thought that it would be June and July and the country would be in such terrible shape. And we'd say, okay, you know what? Let's have Liz Cheney run the Republican Party. That's what they thought we would do. They thought, you know what? Let's stop talking about abortion. Let's stop talking about transgender gender dysphoria. Let's stop talking about a God-centered society. Let's just focus on corporate tax cuts and get along again. And instead, they're getting angry on CNN and MSNBC, and yet they control everything. Have you noticed these are the angriest winners you've ever seen in the history of politics? It's true. It says a lot about how they actually took power, by the way. It's not graceful winners. When you steal something, it's not so graceful. And so when, let me just say something about this. The machine stuff, you guys can figure it out. You all need to read Molly Hemingway's book. It's a new book. I had her on my podcast. It's called Rigged. Outside of the ballot stuff, the fact what big tech did to intervene in the election, the fact of changing the election laws, the fact the media did not cover Hunter Biden or Tony Bobulinski, the fact that social media did not allow these stories. So you guys can get into the machine stuff, whatever. That's not my expertise. My expertise is what social media did, big tech did, corporations did, and all this. There is no one that can say this is a fair election. Zero. It is impossible. So I just want to make sure, because some people say, Charlie, you got to move on from this. I think that's a big mistake. I think that if we don't focus on how the most powerful people on the planet declared war on you, the United Auto Worker, you know, United Auto Worker member that earns $65,000 a year and has a couple kids, like somehow you're the existential threat to the country, and Mark Zuckerberg comes in worth $125 billion and spends $420 million. Like, no, excuse me, that's a threat to democracy. And I'm not going to forget about it. And you shouldn't either. And we have to say, how did this happen? And we're not going to let it happen again. And so now we're at this point where the people in charge, they have done 9 months of trying to obliterate your resolve. And if you kind of think of this in metaphorical war terms, what are you always trying to do to the people that you want to destroy if you're the more powerful power? And I know this is hard for you guys, for some people to admit, but we are kind of outdunned right now. We don't control New York Times. We don't control the FBI. We don't control the CIA. We don't control the media. We don't control the tech companies. All we have are the two most important things, the truth and a relationship with God and the people. Those are the two most important things. Now, they have everything else, right? They have all the institutions. They have all the smart people on television, whatever. And now they're like, we can't get rid of these people. We try to force them to get vaccinated. We try to mask their children. And for whatever reason, they're not giving up. And here's why we are going to win if we keep this up, is that the people that win these sorts of struggles always goes towards the anti-fragile. And so this is the best way I can explain it. If you might not be tracking all of this, who's going to win? The side that is offended because you call them the wrong gender pronoun, or the side that is willing to get fired and lose their career after 30 years because they don't want to take a vaccine? Which side is going to win? The side that is willing to sacrifice for their values and say, you know what, this is my line. You're going to have to take everything from me. It might not feel that way right now, but at some point, all of a sudden, you're going to realize there's more of us than them. You're going to realize that this regime did everything they possibly could to demoralize you and keep you in place and try to make you give up. And actually the opposite is occurring. And so people then say, Charlie, what do I do? What do we do about it? Well, I want to just reiterate something. We are in a spiritual battle right now. We are. This is light versus dark. This is good versus evil. I do not use these words lightly. Your prayer, living obediently to the scriptures, understanding what God commands you for this time is incredibly important. Do not take your eye off the ball that everything you see physically is a manifestation of what is happening spiritually. And especially right now, where you're going to start to see some of the forces of darkness start to get very, very worried that they're no longer going to have a monopoly on what's happening around them. Remember, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It says that very clearly in the scriptures. And so it says in Jeremiah 29:7, one of my favorite scriptures in the whole Bible, the Lord is speaking to Jeremiah and to the people through Jeremiah and to the people of Israel who were actually in exile, where he says, demand the welfare of the nation that I have sent you in, because your welfare is tied to the nation's welfare. We are commanded to care about what's happening around us politically, also governmentally, culturally, and otherwise. We are not called as Christians to just kind of say, hey, you know, we have the truth, we have the light, let's just kind of retreat into the hills, you know, the house is on fire, let's get the kids out, Jesus is coming next Thursday. And look, I'm not sure what, you know, the Lutheran Church's position is on eschatology, which means end times. Here, look, every eschatology comes with an asset and a liability. Every single eschatology. Here's my personal opinion, is that we need to occupy till Jesus comes. That we need to be salt and light in every single way imaginable. That we cannot just say, hey, I'm checking out because everything's not falling apart, it's falling into place. You might be right, but what do you want to be caught doing when Jesus returns? You want to be caught watching football, or you want to be caught praying and involved in local, city, state levels of government? It says in Romans to love what is good and hate what is evil. And we right here are the ones that are called to do that tough work. Let me say this. Someone in this room right now, I'm sure, is going through a tough season right now, being persecuted because of your faith, because of your worldview, because you won't take a vaccine that, quite honestly, is not even a vaccine. But that's a whole different thing, which is more like a treatment than it is a vaccine. And if you're pro-vaccine, whatever, if you're anti, and I don't take a position on that, no one should be forced to take a vaccine against their will. That's very, and also, stop fooling yourself, is that when you take the polio vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask to prevent yourself from getting polio, okay? Is that, it's like somehow we've been wildly propagandized into this whole kind of new set of circumstances. Well, it actually lowers the chance you're hospitalized. That's a completely different argument. If we were worrying about lowering the chance of hospitalization, we should have been talking about hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, azithromycin, vitamin D, and all these things, sent the very aspirin and all these other things. Anyway, didn't mean I always lose some people with that topic. I really don't care. I'm not running for office, you know, whatever. So the point is the force, right? You could only govern human beings in two ways. You can govern them through speech, or you can govern them through force. Speech is what God gave us to be able to govern ourselves. We are made in the image of God, mind, body, soul, or spirit, just like the Trinity, Father, the Son, God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Also, what does it say in Genesis 1 and John 1, the two creation stories in the scriptures? Now, some people say they say things completely different. That's wrong. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1:1, one of my favorite scriptures in the entire Bible. It continues to say that God spoke it into existence. God spoke it into existence. God spoke it into existence. What does it say in John 1? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. What does that word mean? It means logos, which in Greek means rational speech. We, as the speaking beings, as Aristotle would say, our ability to speak is how God made us in his image, to make sense of a chaotic world. We must always continue to be speaking. We must call evil what it is. We must call good what it is. We must elevate the courageous. We also must say that should not happen any longer. It's very simple. And so some Christians say, hey, Charlie, you know, I'm not really into, you know, the economics of it. What are three issues that I can focus on? I say, I'm glad you asked. Number one, I'm going to reiterate what I said at the beginning, is that when does life begin? It's that simple. Human life begins at conception when a new, unique deoxyribonucleic acid is formed. That is a human life made in the image of God and deserves the full and complete protection from the law and from decent society. When does life begin? Currently in America, and Abby Johnson and Candace are far better on this topic than I am, but I did have a very fun debate recently. I went to see that with that pro-abortion guy. Yeah, that was a circus, wasn't it, Mike? I'm sorry you had to watch that. For your sake, I was fine. He was out of control. He was a court jester. But if you ever want to see what the other side believes, and honestly, the spiritual dynamics of that, I think you could see it was absolutely out of control. But if it's not your DNA, it's not your choice. It's that simple. If it's not your DNA, it's not your choice. The other side, the pro-abortion side, you guys have heard the acronym SLED, size, level of development, environmental, degree of dependency. Those are the four arguments the abortion lobby uses. But the other one that they use really is sovereignty. It's my body. It's my choice. I get to do what I want to choose with it. Well, if it's not your DNA, then it's actually not your body. You are the temporary host of that human being. And you should be thanking the Lord you get to be a temporary host of that human being. And let's also not fool ourselves. And I talk about this openly. Most people are afraid to actually get to root causes. Why are there 3,000 abortions every single day in America? The real reason is because we are not open and clear enough with young people about how God designed people to have sexual relations. Is that extramarital sexual relations is what drives people to have 3,000 abortions a day. Now, it's very interesting. Even in this room where I always get golf claps. It's not a joke. I get golf claps because most Christians actually don't agree with what I just said. It's true. When I get golf claps because people get very uneasy because they either themselves or other people participated in those sort of things. I'm not here to be a moralizer. That's not what I do. I'm not here to make you feel sorry for yourself. But if we do not have you feel guilty is what I mean. And instead, what I'm saying is that there must be an ideal that we as Christians hold up and say that you will live an abundantly blessed life if you save yourself for the right human being. I got married in May. It's been the greatest experience of my life. I encourage all young people to get married early and have lots of children and reject all the lies. See, there's some good applause. But they're directly tied together. And so for those of us that are fighting for life, we must also, and I know it's a tough battle. We're up against huge things. It's not easy, right? It's not the popular thing to go into a sex ed class in high school and say, you know, save yourself. But that's the truth, and the truth will set you free. And the truth has a way of contending itself when you release it. And so I think we're fooling ourselves if we don't get to some of the root causes of what actually causes the abortion industry to be able to profit and succeed in this country. The second thing of which I am a very outspoken critic of, which is gender dysphoria craze turned into transgenderism. And so it's very simple. God created man, God created woman. Every Christian should agree with this. Don't overcomplicate it. We should not readjust society for a small group of people that are suffering from a very real mental disorder. And I don't say that lightly. I'm not trivializing it. It's a very real thing. If you suffer or you know people that suffer from gender dysphoria, they should get counseling. They should get medical treatment. Instead, we've decided to say, well, that's who they think they are. That's their identity. First of all, your identity is in Christ. Let's be very clear. Your identity is in your connection to the transcendent. And if you are somehow confused on how God made you, there are healing steps that you can take to solve that. You know what the problem is? The problem is we say, you know what? You're exactly right. You might be a dolphin. You might be a woman. You might be a giraffe. It's whoever you think it is. This is a very important point. We as Christians must get back into the truth argument. The truth is not what you want it to be. The truth is the truth. A is A, as Aristotle would say. God is real and you are not him. And you do not get to all of a sudden say, well, it's my truth. There is no such thing as your truth. There's only the truth. And in a college campus, you go to a college campus, they'll say, well, I'll tell you what, you know, you get to kind of have your own journey and your own way, whatever makes you feel. And this is one of my biggest critiques of Christianity, is that feelings comes from a Greek word pathos, right? And we've always in the scriptures, there's an underemphasis on pathos, always, because your feelings can mislead you. And I think all of us know that if you get into kind of a road rage type incident, that's not your feelings leading you to good and terrific things. Instead, God gave us the Spirit of the Lord to be able to have what? Self-control. Self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. And we must understand that just because you feel a certain way does not make you that certain way. Just because you feel as if the laws of gravity can go into suspense does not make it so. And therefore, we as Christians must be very clear that men should go in the men's locker room, girls should go in the girls' locker room, and men should never compete in female sports. End of story. Call me whatever you want. It's that simple. And let me also tell you, though, what just happened in Loudoun County, Virginia. Has anyone seen what just happened in Loudoun County, Virginia? It's unbelievable what just happened. And we were always told that, oh, you must be tolerant. And again, here's like a thought crime. I really don't care. Aristotle, who's like the man, he was awesome. He said that tolerance and apathy are the two characteristics of a dying society. I need to think about that. Should we be tolerant of evil? That's a very interesting question. Of course not. Most Christians say, well, we must be tolerant of all things. That is not true. What is love? And I'm sure you guys get this sermon quite often. Love is not, the English language, I got a lot of problems with English. Okay? No, seriously. You guys have heard this many times. There's four words in Greek for love: eros, agape, storge, and phileo. There's more than that, actually. Those are the four that are reflected in the scriptures. Phileo, brotherly love, Philadelphia, city of brotherly love, storge, mother, father, mother, daughter, or mother, son type love, or a parental child type love. That is storge, and then eros, romantic type love, a love that you have for your romantic partner. And finally, agape, which is sacrificial or replacement love. And so in John 3:16, it does not say, for God so eros the world, for God so phileoed the world, or for God so storgaed the world. It's for God so agape'd the world. He cared so much that he wanted to bring his own son in replacement for you, sacrificially laying down his life so that you might live free. But the ultimate act of love is not tolerating evil. It is telling the truth. And I will prove it to you. If any of you have gone to the doctor, you want the facts, you want them quickly, you want them honestly, you want them delivered clearly. If you have a tumor, if you have a bad diagnosis, you don't want to be loved in a sense where they cover up what is true. The way to truly love somebody is to look them straight in the eyes and tell them what they're doing wrong. We as Christians have gotten away from this. We say, well, loving people means that we must just accommodate ourselves to everything to the rest of the world. Now, of course, we're all sinners, obviously. And there are three different types of sin. There are private sin. There's a secret sin, private sin, and public sin. And so you never know somebody's secret sin. But if somehow a close friend of yours is repeatedly revealing themselves in secret sin, you have a moral obligation as a Christian to correct them back into alignment. And if you have a friend that is engaging in public sin, that is saying, you know what? I'm an abortion doctor and I'm proud of it. You have a moral obligation to go to them and say, you understand what you're doing, right? This is a life and that, and you might lose that relationship. And I use that example because it's, you know, so extreme. And of course you would do that. And so the question is, we as Christians, are we willing to embrace how Jesus loved us? He told us the truth. Jesus told us that if you do not follow me, eternal damnation. It says in Luke 15, I did not come here to unite the world, but to divide the world, to turn father against son, to turn brother against brother. That's a harsh teaching. Jesus said that the road to heaven, I'm paraphrasing, is very few. That's true, though. That is a truthful teaching. And then the final thing that I'll say, the final thing that Christians should all be able to agree on, and this is kind of more illuminated in the last year and a half since we actually had this wonderful gathering, which is, I'm guessing, why we got postponed, which is why the church should never be forced to shut down again while abortion clinics, marijuana stores, and strip clubs remain open. Ever. Three things. When does life begin? We're going to protect it. God created man, God created woman, and finally, the church will never be shut down again. Those are very three simple things every Christian should fight for at every single level. If I had to add a fourth, it would be care about the education of your children and the education around you. Education comes from a Latin word, which means to lead forth. We need to lead children forth into light, forth into the goodness of the gospel, forth into truth. And so many people are saying, Charlie, so what can we do? What is the right way to go forward? I'll tell you the thing that irritates me most when people come up to me. They say, Charlie, how's it going out there? I say, what am I, like a running back for the Detroit Lions or something? No, I'm not. Huh? You don't like them? Oh, they always lose. Okay, that would be why. It's like, I thought at least I didn't like pick the Packers. I don't think you guys like them here either, right? What state am I in? I was like, I've never been booed when I used the, anyway, the point is that, like, usually that's like accommodating. Whatever. So the point is that we view politics too often as a spectator sport. No matter what chair you sit in, no matter what special jersey you wear, no matter waking up on Thanksgiving morning, hoping the Lions will win, which they won't. See? And I'm playing along. Okay, good. No matter what you do, it doesn't make a difference. That kind of karmic energy is all garbage. Let me tell you what does make a difference. What does make a difference is when you watch politics on TV, you can actually impact that outcome. So you have to retrain your mind. You got to retrain your mind to no longer be a spectator, but be a participant. It's the man in the arena who counts. And so let me close with this. I promise it's the last thing I'm going to say, okay? And I also want to make a shameless plug. I want to thank those of you that listen to our podcast every single day and support us. Deeply appreciate it. You guys can find our podcast on every single phone. It blesses us if you were to subscribe to it. Charlie Kirk Show. We do two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. If you don't know how to subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast, I saw a 9-year-old around here somewhere that would be more than happy to walk you through it. The greatest man to live in the 20th century is Winston Churchill. He was courageous. He was clear. He was a statesman. He was prudent. He knew what he was doing, and he knew what it took to actually save Western society. There was only one man that was smiling on the morning of December 7th, 1941. the day after Pearl Harbor, or the day of Pearl Harbor. And that was Churchill. He was smiling. He goes into the cabinet, and his entire war cabinet says, "Mr. Churchill, why are you smiling? Why are you so gleeful?" He has a cigar and whiskey in his hand, and he gets challenged by one person in the war cabinet. They said, "How could you be so happy? We just barely got our troops out of Dunkirk. The Nazis are bombing us every night. They just bombed the hospital. We are losing 30 Royal Air Force planes a night. How could you be so cheerful?" And Churchill takes a sip of his whiskey and a puff of his cigar, and he says, "Ah, I've studied the Americans. I know them very well. Once they awaken, there's nothing they cannot do. And I'm telling you, once we wake up, everybody, we are going to win." God bless you guys. Thanks so much. Charlie Kirk, everyone.
Well, I'm going to take the liberty as the MC to ask the first question. COVID, go. No, okay, no, that's not it. I've asked in prior years, and I think this question pertains more now than ever. How is it that you combat an ideology of hate without becoming hateful yourself? Whomever wants to take that one.
Yeah, sure. I think it's all about making sure that you know why you're fighting. I talk about that all the time. People need to identify what is the reason that they're fighting. And yes, it is an ideology that is rooted in hate. But, you know, the reasons that I fight, I'm always inspired by things. I'm moved because of love, I guess is the best way to say it. And many people I know in this room and all across the world know the story of my grandfather. And I'm motivated by hope, and I'm motivated by love, and I'm motivated by a belief that we actually can fix things. So I think you do see people, particularly in politics, that get boggled down. They very easily become what they hate. And it's usually because they've lost sight of why it is that they're fighting. And it has to be a constant reminder. It can't be something that in the beginning I started fighting because of this, and now I've ended somewhere else. You have to plug out and plug into the things that matter and remember the reasons that you got started in the first place. That means spending more time with your family, spending more time in meditation, spending more time in prayer, and turning your phone off. We are meant to rest. The Bible talks about rest. It talks about the Sabbath. There's a meaning for that. There's wisdom in that.
So faith, hope, and love. I think I've heard that someplace.
Yeah. Hi. Hey, I have a question for you. How did you break into public speaking? And what would you advise for somebody who's just starting into public speaking?
I mean, the only reason that, well, first, I was trained as a public speaker by Planned Parenthood. So thanks to Planned Parenthood for that. They're actually great media trainers. Secondly, the only reason that I even have a platform today is because of Planned Parenthood, because they sued me, because they took me to court. But I mean, I would say that I guess I have a different story because I sort of was shot into the media because of that lawsuit. And so I guess I sort of have a different story, but, you know, I think it's sort of hit or miss. I mean, the media just sort of picks up on things sort of just as they do. But I think that I tell people all the time, many people have a story. People in here have a story. And I think that all of our stories are important to share with someone. And I think especially surrounding abortion, there are so many people, the pro-life movement is made up of converts. And so many of us have stories to share about whether, you know, we were people who laid on that table and had abortions, or we drove someone to the clinic and paid for an abortion, or whatever it was. And as long as we keep those stories in, Satan controls them. And so I think sharing our stories, sharing our experience is a very important part of the human condition and who we are. And so I think sharing, you know, starting small is important, and sharing with your local community is important. Sharing with your family, sharing with your local church is a great way to start. Not everybody is going to have, you know, what we have up here. And let me tell you something, you don't want it necessarily. But you know, it's certainly a calling. And I would just say, you know, follow that calling, and God will continue to open doors as he sees fit.
I didn't seek it out. It sought me out, unfortunately. I've told the story before about that scenario in front of the Supreme Court building where, you know, I was more or less accosted just because of what I was wearing. And I knew at that moment that I'd better get in the game. And I knew by virtue of the call as a pastor that I already had a box, in a sense, to stand on. And I already had, by God's grace, his word of God, which is the truth. So in one sense, there was no fear going into it. But at the same time, there has to be a recognition that it's not something that I think as a pastor, I'm speaking maybe from a pastoral perspective, we're not looking for it. It's not it can't be a self-promotion kind of thing. It's something that will find you, and God will provide for you, as he promises, those opportunities to be who it is that you are as his called servant, to speak faithfully. It just so happens that by doing that, God has seen fit to, at least for this congregation, to bring to us folks who are in alignment with this, who want to move the ball down the field, who want to do these things. And we're so grateful to have those partnerships. But again, on the other hand, even as Abby just said, I don't appreciate sometimes the things that come with, you know, speaking publicly. I mean, being on lists, you know, from folks in the government here in Michigan, it can be a struggle. Whenever I go to DC, I get spit on. I mean, that's the way that also is part of it too. So in the end, faithfulness, humility, keeping your eyes on the fact that Christ is your identity, as has been said by others here on the stage, and know that God's going to use you where he needs you in these arenas. Just be ready to speak and be faithful.
John Smith from Hillsdale County Republican Party. I'm also with auditmi.org, and my friends and I are spearheading the forensic audit in the state of Michigan. Thank you. My question is, with several states that are trying to attempt to do this forensic audit, we are running into some roadblocks, if you will. And a lot of that roadblock, to be honest with you, is with resourcing, being able to actually let people know that this is going on, finance. Just a petition alone costs $3 million in the state of Michigan. The audit itself is going to cost well over $6 million. These are things that we're going to be running into. Is there a way for people that are doing these type of things to not necessarily ask for money directly? We're looking for teaching a man to fish, if you will, because a lot of us on the team don't have the experience of marketing or different things of that nature. We need to share these type of resources if possible. And I was wondering if that's something that we could do here.
Yeah. So in Arizona, where I live now, and we did do an audit, and we found that there are anywhere between 55,000 to 70,000 illegally administered ballots. And that's just the beginning of the audit findings, not to mention all the other laws that were broken in the sequence of it. So I'm a big audit guy. And let me be very clear. An audit is not a recount. The media conflates them all the time. An audit is not just putting the ballots in the right tray of kind of what it says. It's going ballot by ballot and seeing if it references voter registration databases, if they are administered correctly. And so in Arizona, it was all privately funded. I don't really know who. I read some news reports about it. But here's the short of it. In Arizona, it should have been funded by the legislature. And in Michigan, I would put your attention on getting the Michigan legislature to try to fund it. I don't know if that's realistic or not. You guys can come up with that conclusion yourself. And then the second is the Republican Party of the state should chip in and should try to raise money. That would give it credibility. They have donor lists. They have kind of visibility there. But you need to audit your elections, everybody, especially here in Michigan. And there's two different types of categories. You'll find out ballots that should not have been counted. And then you'll find laws that were broken in the counting of the ballots, which is the administration of actually the election itself. I just want to encourage you, though, that auditing these elections in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia are so incredibly important. And you could see how important by how the media is trying to smear these efforts.
I have a two-part question about our public school system. First one is there any difference between what was and is happening in our universities and what's happening in our public schools today? And how pervasive are organizations like Planned Parenthood in our public schools today?
They're incredibly pervasive. Planned Parenthood is deliberately trying to get into every single public school in the United States. And unfortunately, they are funded by the public school systems in our country. And like I said earlier, their goal is to get into kindergarten. Their sex education starts in kindergarten. And so with the Title X now being refunded, Title X clinics are, or Title X funds at Planned Parenthood are primarily used for teen clinics because Title X funds do not require parental consent. And so Trump had defunded Planned Parenthood from Title X money. Now Biden, of course, has refunded abortion facilities to receive Title X. So what Planned Parenthood uses that money for is for primarily teen clinics. So what does that mean? That means that now Planned Parenthood can go into a public school system. They can open up a clinic inside of a public junior high and a public high school. And so that means that our kids can get on birth control starting at 10, 11, 12 years old. They can get on a birth control that has a high human error rate. Now, I'm not a fan of birth control anyway, but just stay with me here. They can get on a birth control method that has a high human error rate, knowing that Guttmacher already says, their own research arm already says that 54% of women who have abortions were using contraception at the time that they got pregnant. Okay. So they're putting them on a birth control method that they know is going to fail intentionally. Because remember, I already told you guys that their ideal client is going to have 3 abortions by the time that they're 25. Right? This is where they start. They start in the public schools. So absolutely part of their business model is to get into the school starting in kindergarten. They're going to break down their natural modesty. They're going to start showing your kids sex positions with stuffed animals by the time they're in first grade. They're going to start breaking apart the family dynamics. They're going to start telling your kids, your parents are antiquated. You don't want to go to them when you start having questions about sex. You want to come to me. This is all part of their business model. And guys, it's working. It is working. And so all the time, you know, people are saying, oh, well, I know the solution. I'm just going to homeschool my kid. I'm just going to pull my kid out of school. I'm just going to put my kids in private school. And that's great. You know what? That is part of the solution, but that is not the solution. Because guess what? There are kids that are still sitting in public schools that need to be protected from these predators. They need to be protected from these grooming efforts of Planned Parenthood and other abortion entities that are going into our private school. Who is going back for them? It's got to be us. It has to be you. You can't just pluck your kid out of public school and go, "Oh, protected my kid. Screw you guys." You can't do that. You have to go back and you have to protect those other kids. And so just because all 8 of my kids are going to go to a private school. 7 of my kids currently go to a private Catholic school. But you know what? When it's time, when I need to go to a SHAC meeting in Texas, when I need to go to a school board meeting in Texas, guess who's there? Me. When Charlie didn't even have kids. Yeah. And he didn't even have kids yet. And he was at a school board meeting in Arizona. Okay? So we have to do the job. We have to show up at these school board meetings and we have to protect these other kids whose parents aren't showing up to protect them.
Yeah.
I didn't want to assume it's more of a post, Candace.
I just wanted to go back to answering your question. The answer is no. I think you were asking if there's a difference between the university level and the public school system. And no, they're both state funded and state controlled by the government. And I would encourage people to read a book called Inside the Education System. It was written by Thomas Sowell, and he really will help you understand how Planned Parenthood infiltrated and when this sex education began and how it was really built upon a lie. A lie meaning that the idea that kids were all just doing it when in fact they weren't. The rates of children that were graduating with their virginity in the 70s was the majority until they invoked sex education. And it's really, you really kind of have to understand how it was engineered if you ever want to make an effort to reverse engineer. And to add on to what Abby was saying, I want, and I want to go back to the idea that I do think that change does start in the home, and the primary individual basis, family to family. So do what you can to pull your children out before you turn to the community. Once you have, you know, successfully protected your child, we as Christians should always go into the community and do what we can to help our neighbors who may be existing under these same delusions. I do not think that there is a path forward in which the public education system can be transformed. You know, I have been a passionate advocate alongside Charlie for years for the abolishment of the Department of Education. You know, I've been looking in Tennessee at micro schools, which is something that people should be familiar with, and really going back to the beginning, which began with homeschools on a parent-to-parent basis. Again, the individuals linking up with the neighborhoods and the community, establishing networks that work to raise up children the right way.
Great. Good.
I just want to add a positive note. The homeschooling population has doubled in the last 18 months in this country.
Okay, I have a specific question for you, Abby. This is about your, I know you reach out to pregnancy resource centers and, you know, with your ministries and such. Do testing for STIs and STDs lower abortion rates? The free testing that centers can do, is that reaching the abortion-minded women? Is it actually helping to promote the pro-life values?
Yeah. So, that is a great question. And, we have found some evidence that shows that that actually does help. So, you know, it's all risky behavior, right? So, and that's why Planned Parenthood does not offer gonorrhea and chlamydia tests because they care about the STD rates in your community. Okay. They offer STD testing because they want to have that first touch point experience with people in their community that are participating in risky behavior. Okay? This is part of their plan. So if you are participating in risky sexual behavior, what are you statistically, what are you more likely to experience later in life? An unplanned pregnancy, right? And Marketing 101 is going to tell you that if you've already had that first touch point experience with Planned Parenthood for your STD test, where are you going to go back to when you have that unplanned pregnancy? Planned Parenthood, where you had that first touch point experience. That's why they provide STD testing. Okay. It's not because they care about your STD rates. So the purpose of pregnancy resource centers offering those services early on is so that they can have that first touch point experience with that woman. So there has been some data to show that if we can intercept those clients early on, and if we can start talking to those women and men early on, and we can help curtail that risky behavior, that number one, not only will we help reduce the unintended pregnancy rate, because really, if you want to reduce crisis pregnancies, then you've got to reduce the crisis pregnancy rate, right? So you've got to say, I mean, if you want to reduce abortions, you've got to reduce the crisis pregnancy rate, right? So you just make it so that people aren't getting pregnant. And so you've got to intervene at that moment, that earlier moment. And so that's what some of the research is saying, that like we want to get to them before the crisis pregnancy even occurs. One of the ways to do that is to intervene during the risky behavior. And that's what the STD testing is allowing people to do.
I'm sorry, if we can just leave it to one person, we've got a really finite amount of time. Thank you.
I wanted to speak to all of you about what I've seen in the latest legislative session in Texas. So we had about 8 or 9 abortion-related bills, and all of them made it through except for one, House Bill 3326 by Brian Slayton. So I met with Mr. Slayton personally, and for some reason his bill never passed committee because his bill would actually abolish abortion. So what I wanted to bring to your attention is there's a game going on with the pro-life movement. So they're pushing bills that regulate abortion but never end it. House Bill 3326 would have actually ended it. And Stephanie Click, the committee chairwoman, we spoke to her staff. They supposedly didn't have time for it, or they were busy with the other bills. So I think you guys with the platform, the followers you have, can maybe address the game that's going on. These pro-life organizations are really just in it for the money, in my opinion. So there's a group of abolitionists, Abolish Abortion Texas, Free the States in Oklahoma. So I think this needs to be brought to your attention. Me, one person, I can tell everybody, but you guys can maybe, especially Abby, you're in Texas just like I am. I don't know if you supported that bill or if somehow you'd be willing to meet with Mr. Slayton. He's a freshman. He's in his first term, so he hasn't been corrupted yet, is the way I see it. So just want to see if somehow you guys can help out and get this thing done, because all we're doing is regulating it right now.
Well, I think we're probably going to have to look into specifically what you're talking about. So thank you for the information, because I think we'd all have to just actually look into exactly what you're talking about. That was very specific information.
Yeah, it's the Abolition of Abortion and Equal Protection for the Unborn Act.
Okay, thank you very much.
And it died in committee, so it's just bring it to everybody's attention.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, thanks for coming. I have a question. So we're here, and I go to a lot of these faith-based presentations, and I follow all you people here. But I have a question. Most of my work, I'm a businesswoman, and most of my clients are Jewish. I have one that I've become particularly close with, and she has said to me, I am so disappointed in the Jewish community. She said, I feel like I'm hiding in plain sight, that they're not seeing through all this. And I'm obviously Christian, so I don't have very much experience. Can you guys give me a little bit of something that I can share with her to help her in the community that she's a part of?
I
was thinking it was going to be Charlie, though.
I was joking. I said, tell her to read the Torah. I mean, look, it's very simple. The more religious the Jew is, the more conservative they are. The less religious the Jew is, the more liberal they are. And it's not, you don't have to overcomplicate it. Dennis Prager has the greatest commentary on this, I think, of anyone. And yes, it's incredibly frustrating for people that, you know, that are supposed to be believers in the law, then are, you know, as the Torah, as an ultimate value, kind of like the big Jewish three values are God, Torah, Israel. And they have a party, or they support a party overwhelmingly, that doesn't read the Torah, hates Israel, and doesn't believe in God. It's incredibly frustrating. So I agree with you. And I have nothing but accompaniment in your confusion.
That's pretty good.
I am a pro-life warrior. I'm also a known domestic terrorist in our community. I did pull my kids from school, and I'm homeschooling them. And Abby, you just took the words out of my mouth, and you said that, and I've been trying to say to my Christian friends that even if you pull your kids from school and even if you put them in the private schools, I equate it to the same thing as defending all those lives at the abortion clinic, that us parents still need to go to the school board meetings and defend those children that are helpless. To stand up for them. But my question to you, Abby, is with being a pro-life warrior and going to the abortion clinics and going to Planned Parenthood, we're able to stop them from getting the abortion pill there, and we're able to do sidewalk counseling there. But I'm concerned with what you just shared today, because I was unaware of that they were able to do these appointments online and to be able to get these medications from the other countries. Is there anything that we can do, or anything that you know of that I can take back to my ministry to be able to combat that in any way? Like, how do we reach those women that are getting the medication in that form?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, because this is a new battle, because we're on like a new front here with the medication abortion and the online accessibility of medication abortion, the only way that we can fight this is through the internet. So we can fight this through Google AdWords. We can fight this through geofencing. So that takes a lot of money. Okay. So pregnancy centers are really our best defense in this regard. So, pregnancy, I don't know if do you work with your local pregnancy center at all?
A little, not very much.
So what I would do is I would try to partner up with them. I would find out what they're doing. What are they doing with Google AdWords? Do they have an active Google AdWords campaign? How much are they funding it? Generally, to have a successful Google ad camp, and this is just FYI, to have a successful Google AdWord campaign to fight medication abortion, online medication abortion, they need to be paying at least about $30,000 to $40,000 a year. Okay? And that's minimum what they need to be paying to fight this. It's a lot of money. It's expensive, but lives are on the line. And this is the only way that we can fight it. You know, I mean, this is not, yes, we've got to go out to the clinics because yes, we've got to still be there for those surgical abortion patients, but over 50% are now receiving abortions online. So this is just a new battle. This is a new frontier, and we're going to have to fight it with money. And the abortion industry, they've got unlimited resources coming from Warren Buffett. And so we've got to, and we have the money. We have the money. We just have to pool it. We have to utilize it, and we have to be strategic with how we use it.
We only have a few more minutes, so maybe two quick questions and answers.
Here, this is my first time going to a conference. You guys are all amazing. I have like two burning questions, but I know we can only do one. So my one burning question is like, I go to a community college and this is my first year there and I've been homeschooled my whole life. And my question is, how can you reach out to like people and like even teachers who are like really very liberal and have different opinions than you do? And like, how can I contradict to what they have to say to help them to come to Christ?
You know, I think this goes in line with the question that I was answering earlier. I was talking about how leading by example and standing firm in your truth and standing firm in truth and in righteousness is sometimes enough. And I think one of the things that we sometimes get wrong is expecting immediate results. We want people, it's the truth. Look at it. 1 + 1 = 2. How can you not see that? And we have to realize that what we are combating is an incredible, sinister, well-funded global operation propaganda machine, right? I mean, this is huge. You're combating a brainwash machine that has been decades in the making. It's an information war. There's so much coming at them that they're being told lies over and over and over again. And sometimes telling people the truth is not enough to instantly transform them, but give it time. You know, my transformation story obviously didn't happen overnight. I believed the lies because I was a part of the education system. It starts so early from the second that you step into the public school system. Fortunately for you, you didn't step into the public school system. So they've had 18 years of being told the lie, and telling them the truth is not necessarily going to be immediate. But I think standing firm in the truth and leading by example, as I said earlier, and showing people that the ways that they're invested in are not actually bringing them happiness, planting seeds sometimes is enough. And so I think I've sort of reset my expectations. And I think when I'm in every room, every contrarian room, how many seeds can I plant today, right? You may be planting a lot of seeds. Don't get discouraged by the fact that you're not seeing the full plant that's supposed to sprout out. You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am sorry to say this is the part of the evening where everybody gets to hate the MC because I get to give the bad news that our time has come to an end. Can we have one more great big round of applause for all
Thank
of
you
our
guys.
Great speakers?
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.